The Insurance and Banking Subcommittee will come to order. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair DeSegli.
Here.
Vice Chair Hague.
Here.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite.
Here.
Representatives Barnaby.
Here.
Beltran.
Here.
Brown. Driscoll. Fabricio.
Here.
Fetterhoff.
Here.
Hardy.
Here.
Coster.
Here.
Rayner.
Here.
Robinson.
Here.
C. Smith. D. Smith.
Here.
Snyder.
Here.
Toledo.
Here.
Zika.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Let the record reflect that a quorum is present. Before we begin our meeting, a few reminders. I will ask everyone to please remember to silence your electronic devices. Also, members, please ensure that you turn your microphone on when you are speaking, including when you vote, and off when you are finished. Welcome back, members. This morning, we're going to hear five bills and a proposed committee substitute. So we will get right to it. Members, we will now take up House Bill 701, Behavioral Health Care Services Coverage and Access, by Representative Stevenson. Representative Stevenson, you are recognized to explain your bill before we take up the amendment.
Trying to figure out, is it on? Terrific, because I couldn't figure out where the on switch is. Thank you, Chair DeSegli, Vice Chair and Ranking Member.
Is it on?
Ranking Member Wilhite.
Representative, hold on one second if you would. I don't think the microphone is on, so.
Do you know how to?
Is it on? Yeah.
It's up there.
Okay. Yeah, it's on.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, let's start that over again. Representative Stevenson, you are recognized to explain your bill before the amendment.
thank you, Chair DeSegli, Vice Chair Hague, and Ranking Member Wilhite. Members, House Bill 701, the original bill, is basically an executive summary of what the new bill will be. The amendment fleshes out the details a bit. The objective of the bill is to provide people that are covered with insurance that have benefits for mental health and substance abuse services to know their rights under the federal and state law by having them posted on the insurer's website as well as a state website, and is the disclosure of that and the access to an 800 number so that they can call people if they're having difficulty with getting services, have a number to call to help resolve those issues. And that's a service that's already provided by the Department of Financial Services. And this would just make it more available and raise the awareness with the general public so they can help resolve any issues they're experiencing.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? Okay, seeing none. Representative Stevenson, you are recognized to explain Amendment Number 1.
The amendment will expand and is more specific about the disclosures that would be required on the insurer's website as well as the state, and is just more explicit about the laws that will be disclosed. And that is the nature of the amendment, is just to make the original bill more specific in its direction. To the department and to the, what is expected of the insurance companies.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. Members, any questions on the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, any public testimony? Okay, we've got Austin Stowers from the Department of Financial Services, waves in support on the amendment. Is there any debate? Any debate on the amendment? Okay, seeing no debate. Representative Stevenson, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Wave closed.
Okay, having waving closed. Other objections to the amendment? Seeing none without objection, show the amendment adopted. Okay, members, we are now in questions on the bill as amended. Any questions on the bill as amended? Seeing none, public testimony. Austin Stowers, Department of Financial Services, waves in support. Debate. Members, we're in debate on the bill. Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry. Too quick there. Okay, we have David Serdar. David Serdar here. He is a proponent of the bill, okay? Alejandro Gonzalez, United Way of Broward County. He waves in support. Okay, that's it with public testimony. Now, members, we are in debate on the bill as amended. Okay, seeing none, Representative Stevenson, you are recognized to close on your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to add that with this amendment, there is a change. The bill has a report to the governor, speaker, and Senate president. We changed the effective dates for the bill and slightly delay the report due date to give people time to implement the changes. I really appreciate your consideration of this bill. We find that only the department is receiving about 5 complaints a year, and they're able to help people resolve half of them. In our offices, you will hear complaints about it, and this is one way to help make sure people get the information that they need so they can resolve issues they're having accessing care. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Stevenson, having closed on the bill, Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair DeSegli?
Yes.
Vice Chair Haig?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Brown? Driscoll?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
C. Smith?
Yes.
D. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Zika?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, by your vote, House Bill 701 will be reported favorably. Representative, thank you for your leadership in this area. I really do appreciate that.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, next up, we have... members, we will now take up House Bill 895, Consumer Finance Loans by Representative Stevenson. Representative Stevenson, you are recognized to explain your bill before we take up the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The House Bill 895 codifies some best practices for the Florida Statute 516 installment lenders, including establishing minimum installment payments. I do have a strike all amendment.
Okay, members, are there any questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? Okay, Representative Stevenson, you are recognized to explain amendment number one.
Thank you. This amendment would revise some of the changes that were in the original bill. This includes establishing a minimum of 6 installment payments to help ensure the loan payments are more affordable and eliminating prepayment penalties. The bill also gives lenders the option of keeping the current $25,000 liquidity requirements per location or using $25,000 surety bonds, certificate of deposits or letters of credits for each company, with a $5,000 per additional location rider and with reporting requirements to the state regulator and the Office of Financial Regulation. This will give OFR more stable methods to hold licensees accountable and help maintain the necessary protection should they be subject to an adverse judgment or fine by the office. It provides additional options for the license. These additional options will help free up capital for lenders to lend to their customers while still ensuring regulatory safeguards are met. And that is the amendment.
Okay. Members, are there any questions on the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, we have public testimony. Any debate on the amendment? Any debate on the amendment? Seeing none. Representative Stevenson, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Waive close.
Okay, are there any objections to the amendment? Without objection, show the amendment adopted. Members, we are now on the bill as amended. Any questions on the bill as amended? Okay, seeing none. Public testimony? Doreen Barker from AARP. She waves in support. We've got Pamela Birch Fort from the Florida State Conference of NAACP Branches, waving in support. And we have C. Jenkins, Florida Financial Services Association, the Executive Director, Senior Government Consultant. Sir, you are recognized.
Yes, sir. My name is Scott Jenkins. It truncated my name when I registered. My full name is Christopher Scott Jenkins. Chairman DeSegli and committee members, thank you for allowing me to speak today in support of HB 895. My name is Scott Jenkins, and I am the Executive Director of the Florida Financial Services Association. Over the last few years, many of you have been helpful to our industry in stopping legislation that allowed for unlicensed installment loan brokering for one single company. We oppose this as well. Thank you for your help. Our members' customers are predominantly those looking to rebuild or rebuild their credit and financial mobility. Governed by Chapter 516, FFSA members provide Florida families with safe and affordable loans under $25,000, fully underwritten and repaid in regularly scheduled installments. Loan performance is reported to the major credit bureaus, allowing responsible borrowers to build, improve, and reestablish the credit scores essential to financial mobility. Operating from branches in local communities across Florida, our relationship-based lending model helps consumers successfully and responsibly access and use credit to meet their financial goals. We believe our members' products can be a part of a potential policy solution for Florida lawmakers, allowing widespread availability of a safe form of non-bank credit without diminishing consumer protections against predatory or problematic lenders. This will require the modernization of lending laws that have remained largely unchanged since the 1970s. As a result, loan deserts exist in Florida where there is demand for credit but no legal regulated supply. With only 220 Chapter 516 branch locations in the state compared with 4,608 bank branches, 32 of Florida's 67 counties are considered credit insecure. These are communities with high concentrations of residents but no or low ability for them to obtain credit at choice. Three of the country's 50 most credit insecure counties are in Florida. Credit deserts also exist in areas of more credit secure counties. The FFSA is embarking on a multi-year effort to modernize Chapter 516 to create a more accessible and inclusive lending environment in our state and to reflect modern, safe, and sound industry business practices. This will help attract more lenders and jobs to our state, create more accessibility for customers to in-state lenders, and create less of a reliability on out-of-state internet lenders who are not subject to our state's regulatory oversight. As part of this multi-year effort, we are advocating for HB 895 by Representative Stevenson, which will, as a sponsor described, institute minimum loan term lengths, ban prepayment penalties, create greater assurances that consumers are protected when lenders act inappropriately, and free up capital for lenders to lend. Thank you for your support. I am here to answer any questions if you need to.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, members, we are now in debate on the bill as amended. Any debate on the bill? Okay, seeing none, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Stevenson, for bringing this bill. I served with you on insurance and banking last year, and I know that you have a heart for consumers and really working hard to find that balance between having consumer choice, but of course having the appropriate safeguards. I think this is a great bill. I look forward to seeing what's to come as you try to modify this area of the law. So thank you.
Thank you.
Members, any other debate on the bill as amended? Representative Stevenson, you are recognized to close on your bill as amended.
Members, I thank you for your consideration of this bill. I'd appreciate your favorable support.
Representative Stevenson, having closed on the bill, Kimberly, will you please call the roll?
Chair DeSigley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Haig?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Betterhoff?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Rainer?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
C. Smith?
Yes.
D. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Zika?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, House Bill 895 will be reported favorably. Again, thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Okay, members, we will now take up House Bill 917, Documentary Stamp Tax Exemption by Representative McLean. We're just asking folks to get a little closer to the microphone, please, if you would, Representative. You are recognized to explain the bill before we take up the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. House Bill 917 the intent of the bill is to protect Floridians from having to pay a tax that results from an involuntary change. Recently, financial regulators have determined that the financial standard known as LIBOR is no longer useful as a standardized rate and will be phased out at the end of 2021. The phase out will require contracts that use LIBOR as an index to have to be renegotiated, which would trigger a taxable event. Therefore, the bill amends Florida law to provide that a modification to an original contract for the purpose of updating an interest reference rate that has been discontinued is not considered a renewal. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, members, are there any questions on the bill? Ranking Member Wilhite, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, isn't a refi, when you do a refi, isn't that a new contract to begin with? Or are you stating that because it seems as though it's just a considered a modification of the original one then?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So a refi would be different than an involuntary. This is an involuntary. This would be an involuntary action that would take place because the LIBOR rate is being thrown out, so it wouldn't be, it's not a refi, it wouldn't be considered a refi. It's considered an involuntary change in a contract that if you had one, you wouldn't have had any choice over what happened. So that's why we're having to try to make this change.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none. Representative McLean, you are recognized to explain amendment number one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, In the interest of trying to make sure that the bill only spoke to an interest rate change, we added one word in here. It was only an interest rate change. So that's the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Any questions on the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? Any public testimony? Any debate on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative McLean, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Wave close.
Are there objections to the amendment? Without objection, show the amendment adopted. Okay, members, we are now on the bill as amended. Any questions on the bill as amended? Okay, seeing none, public testimony. Courtney Larkin, Florida Bankers Association, waves in support. Okay, that concludes our public testimony. Members, any debate on the bill as amended? Representative Robinson, you are recognized.
Thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill. It's maybe a sad commentary on what I do for a living, but I think I review this chapter more than any chapter in Florida statutes. So what you're doing is a needed change in law just to make sure that you don't have an unnecessary tax that really is inadvertent. So thank you for bringing this bill forward. I'm going to support it. Thank you.
Any other debate, members? Any other debate? Okay, seeing none, Representative McLean, you are recognized to close on your bill as amended.
I'll waive close.
Okay, having waived close, Kimberly, will you please call the roll?
Chair DeSegli?
Yes.
Vice Chair Haig?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
C. Smith?
Yes.
D. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Toledo? Yes. Zika?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, by your vote, House Bill 917 will be reported favorably. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members.
Okay, members. Okay, members, we will now take up House Bill 815, Insurance by Representative Gregory. Representative, you are recognized to explain your bill before we take up the amendment.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee, colleagues. I know with your service on this committee, even if it's your first year, but especially those that have been here 2 years or longer, you know what a complex and highly regulated area of the law this is. This bill this year, Bill 815, is really an annual bill that we look at in the Florida legislature. Because insurance is such a highly regulated area of the law, it's necessary to review it every year and see if there's any changes we need to make. You can see by the length of the bill this year, we've got 17 adjustments we're making. But really, those adjustments are broken into efficiency, increased use of data and information to improve the integrity of the rate-making system, and really to remove some regulatory hurdles. I'm not going to go through all 17 examples that are in the staff analysis and in the bill, but I'll just say, highlight a few of them for you. For example, it removes a redundant license requirement. If you already have a license to sell as an insurance agent in the general lines, it doesn't now, this law will change it so you don't have to obtain a license for a lesser home warranty, motor vehicle warranty, et cetera, because you already have training that far exceeds what would be required for that license. It makes a technical change for when service of process is effectuated on a defendant. That, frankly, that's something we learned during COVID, as so many offices were teleworking. There was some service of process, people are being sued, paperwork shows up at one office, doesn't make the final destination, so the defendant can't properly defend themselves. And it improves Floridians' ability to access the flood insurance market. That's a market that there aren't many carriers in, and we had some requirements in Florida law that basically made it impossible for them to comply and go through the diligent effort process. We're making improvements. As I said, there's 17 areas. I'm happy to take questions on any of them. That is the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Ranking Member Wilhite, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just have one on this bill, I promise. Thank you, Representative, for this bill. And obviously, as you talk about insurance and how it's regulated, how it's a necessity, obviously, to all Floridians in any area of their life, insurance is important. Could you, in your presentation, tell me, contrary to what we're doing to help insurance companies, what relief or streamlining this is for everyday Floridians and how it can make it easier for them or help them in the insurance market? And if it's not it's a question if you'll do it in your presentation so we can hear again how this bill helps everyday Floridians. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative, you recognize.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question, and I appreciate the offline conversation that we had about this issue and others. You know, look, the bill is designed to make the insurance market, again, more efficient and remove regulatory hurdles. That should help Floridians. For example, as I said, it removes a redundant license requirement. So that should make it easier for Floridians to go directly to the agent that they're already working with. It should make it, or it can make it in the staff analysis, cheaper. If you look to Section 1 of the bill, the collateral protection insurance coverage, and you look in the staff analysis, OIR has indicated that that may bring down rates. So I think when you remove regulatory hurdles, make the process more efficient, and look to the OIR analysis, it should help Floridians obtain the insurance they need, whether you're talking about collateral protection or flood insurance, and it hopefully will drive down prices. So it could help Floridians in both ways.
Representative Driscoll, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Representative Gregory. I had some questions about the bill. I see that there are some modifications to the assignment of benefits law. Could you walk us through those changes and why they're necessary?
You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question. Yeah, there was some clarification necessary in the assignment of benefits. Remember, you were here when we addressed assignment of benefits abuses and made some changes to protect Floridians and consumers 2 years ago. There were some contractors that tried to argue as a technicality they weren't subject to those changes that we made. For example, mold testers said that they didn't fall within the law. So this just clarifies that they are subject to those statutes that we passed.
Okay, members, any other questions? Okay, Representative Gregory, you are recognized to explain Amendment Number 1.
Thank you, Chair. As I said, we do this bill almost every year. I'm happy to say that this year, I think maybe for the first time, after its first committee stop, we should be matching the Senate. So this amendment really does two things. It's going to match our Senate counterpart bill, and then it makes the changes that are made inside the amendment. I'll highlight a few of them just so you can see that, again, this is something that professionals and your staff who are so diligently reviewing these things all year highlight. As an example, they found there's a requirement, believe it or not, in Florida law that there is a rubber stamp placed on some insurance policies. So for people that have antique cars, remember when you were knocking on doors and maybe you knocked on one of your neighbor's doors in your district and they had an antique car that never leaves the garage, they have to have an insurance policy still on that car. Well, under Florida law, they literally had to have it in a jacket. This is really old school, a jacket that the policy goes inside of, and then it was stamped on top. And that just, of course, is not reality today. You know, a lot of insurance policies are being issued electronically. But regardless, nobody uses a policy jacket or a rubber stamp anymore. So that's just one example. It also has teleconference, telequorum scenarios that it addresses. And it also adds a veteran-owned small business to the list of entities that can already provide some insurance training for pre-licensing coursework. So it does a variety of things. Perhaps most importantly, it matches our Senate counterpart so that these two bills can move through. That is the amendment.
Okay, thank you. Any questions on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, public testimony. Hillary Cassell, Florida Policyholders Cooperative. Good morning, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. Thank you, members. Hillary Cassell, on behalf of Florida Policyholders Cooperative, we're here in opposition to the bill, specifically Section 414, lines 422 through 423, which pertains to the payment of ordinance and law coverage with applicable building codes at the time of loss. You're probably asking yourselves, why is this problematic? Well, let me explain to you. The current law in Florida is that an insurance company does not owe ordinance and law coverage in the initial adjustment of a claim. They only owe ordinance and law coverage when it is actually incurred by the insured. Now, why is that important? That provides a benefit to the insurance companies to make sure an insured actually does the repairs that are contemplated. But it also means that at the time of the adjustment, the insurance company isn't responsible for paying an insured known upgrades as a result of a building code at the time of loss. Now, apologize. What does that mean for a consumer? A consumer then has to go through the process of submitting a claim, getting that payment from the insurance company, going through the mortgage company process, hiring a contractor, pulling permits, and being told at that time for the first time that there's a change in the building code and the repairs that were contemplated are no longer acceptable and an upgrade must happen. That is the first time that an insurance company now actually is going to be on the hook or responsible for paying for that code change to no fault of the consumer. So what the insurance companies are asking you here today is they kind of want both sides. They want to be able to hold on to that money, make the insured go through the process of submitting the claim, dealing with all of those obstacles, and not owing for it until a date uncertain in the future, but being responsible for only the building code in place at the time or the day before the loss occurred. In practical application, let's talk about hurricanes. A hurricane hits in October. We've got a building code change that goes into effect January 1 of the following year. The applicable laws that would be in place are going to be at the time of the hurricane or the day before, not 3 months later. So if the insurance company or the insurance industries want to pay ordinance and law at the time of loss, they should have to include that in their initial adjustment of the claim to the homeowner. That's what we're asking for, that we have been working with the stakeholders and trying to get some compromise language. Unfortunately, before we got here today, that didn't happen. We hope that as this bill continues to move forward, we continue to work with them, But we do find it problematic for consumers, and we ask that you, in light of that, vote no on the bill.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Okay. Any debate on the amendment? Any debate on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, Representative Gregory, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd just like to address quickly the point that she raised. Really, it's Section 11, not Section 14. But that situation is only going to arise if a homeowner experiences a loss, and then, let's say, a year or two later, a local government changes an ordinance and then requires them to build to a higher code. A local government, of course, should not do that. Nonetheless, it has nothing to do with the insurance companies and what they were insuring the homeowner for. They're not insuring into the future and building codes that may change. They insure to the date of loss. So it's a completely logical and appropriate place to set as a certain amount what the risk is for the insurance company and what the homeowner should be compensated for the loss. It's at the time of the loss.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. Are there objections to the amendment? Without objection, show the amendment adopted. Okay, members, we are now on questions on the bill as amended. Any questions on the bill as amended? Representative Hardy, you are recognized for a question on the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I would like to know, with respect to, I don't want to call it a dispute, but a difference of opinion between the Florida Policyholders Cooperative and, you know, yourself about this. You're saying that the insurer did not insure against changes to the building code, basically, that might require, in the event of a loss, event that might require upgrades to the structure that, you know, weren't there when they were insuring whatever it was that was lost, right? And so, you know, I'm wondering, and, you know, forgive me, but what option is available to the consumer, right? So the consumer is trying to insure what they have. They're trying to make sure that they can replace it. The insurer gets to say, well, this wasn't what we were covering. So what option exists for the consumer there other than to pay out of pocket?
You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question. I think really there's three options for the consumer in that kind of scenario. And again, you're talking about, let's say there's a loss today, but before you can hire a contractor and file your claim and get your reimbursement, let's say that takes 18 months. And during those 18 months, your local county government changes the building code, or they do something that isn't covered by the insurance policy you had on the day of the loss. So I think there's three things a consumer can do. First, they could petition for some type of variance from their local government that increased the regulations on them that weren't in place at the time that they experienced the loss. The second thing they could do is vote out those bad local government officials that changed the building code and hurt all those Floridians in that district that just experienced a loss, let's say, to a hurricane or a flood. That would be bad government. The third thing that we could do if we wanted to as a legislative body is we could draft legislation to preempt local governments and say that we could fix this problem for Floridians that say those building codes, again, locked in place at the time of the loss, you can only require those homeowners to build back to the code that was in place at that time. So there's three things we could do.
Okay, any other questions? You have a follow-up, Representative Hardy?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you be willing to amend this bill to include that preemption in it so that consumers aren't reliant on a second act of the legislature to ensure that they are made whole to the extent that they can be?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I would certainly be willing to consider that. The only hesitation I would have would be, you know, again, working with our Senate counterparts to make sure that, number one, this doesn't derail the bills, make them not match, so then we can't pass this good law into place. And two, to make sure that it doesn't re-reference us, push us back into lower committees, and then we can't get it through. But I would certainly be in favor of that type of bill if you want to work on it together.
Any other questions? Okay, on to public testimony. Joy Ryan, Florida Service Agreement Association. She waves in support. Hillary Castle, Florida Policyholders Cooperative. She waves in opposition. Scott Mattial, Personal Insurance Federation of Florida. Waves in support. Mark Delegal, State Farm Mutual Automobile Insurance Company.
Good morning.
You are recognized.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Mark Delegal here today on behalf of State Farm. I wanted to respond to something that Ms. Cassell said regarding the hypothetical and clarify the language of the bill. So if you look at the language of the bill, it says applicable ordinances or laws enacted on or before the time of the loss. So in her hypothetical, she said there was a hurricane in October, but a new building code goes into effect in January. I would contend that the new building code had been enacted and therefore would be covered. The notion here is that the insurance industry knows the bargain it's getting into and can rate and charge appropriately. If it knows that it can't rely upon that situation and there is a potential for post-loss adjustments to building codes, ordinances, or laws, they're in doubt. They're at risk. So what do people do when they're in doubt at risk? They either flee that risk, which is not a good result, or they charge more to ensure that they are able to compensate the claims. This is not a revolutionary issue. It hasn't been quite litigated this morning in this committee, but it was heavily litigated in the Senate. And so I want to preempt the issue that this is some revolutionary issue. This has been the practice and process of State Farm in Florida for decades. This was in our policy for decades. It is in our policy in other states. Specifically, I confirmed in Georgia that it is fixed as of the date of loss. That is, it's never been a trouble. There's been contention that what we will do is deliberately drag out the claim, and during that time that we would end up in a situation where there'd be a natural change, an organic change in the code, and that we would step away from our obligation to pay that. I would submit to you that under Chapter 624, 155, there's a bad faith cause of action. If the insurance company acts in bad faith, it causes extra contractual damages to the policyholder. There's a remedy at law for that. That is not our normal practice. We are just trying to conform this law, what a little bit more of a background. This was in our policy for a long time, and the regulator forced us to take it out about 2 years ago because they, quote, said we didn't have statutory authority. I would contend we don't need statutory authority. The way the rules work is unless the legislature prohibits, you can do your contract as you wish. However, we, our forms people, took it out. So we were directed to come to the Capitol building and to get some relief. This is not a major issue. I am totally committed, as Ms. Cassell said, to work with her on some language to prevent the concerns that she has. I want to work on that. I will end with this, though. And this is, I don't mean to preach, but I just want to explain, if you think about this, is why you should feel comfortable. What you want in society is that before government acts, there's a friction of the people versus the policymakers making change, just like in this building. So take an example of a city who decides it wants to amend its code after a loss to drive up the cost of rebuilding the structures in the community. If they know they're going to get to send the bill to, I'll just be direct, Bloomington, Illinois, headquarters of State Farm, got $120 billion in capital in the bank, they will be less concerned about adjusting the code to drive the cost up, knowing that the consumers in their community won't have to pay. But if they know that if they add cost to the consumer, you got to balance cost versus life safety issues. These are all life safety issues. I concede that. But that's a natural tension. You want to keep that political tension in place. That's why this piece has been embedded in the insurance policy for years, just to make sure that it's a check against the concern that I'm raising to you. Again, it is not revolutionary. This is minor. And I am committed, if Representative Gregory will allow me to, and you will allow me to try to work out something that resolves this in a way that is fair to the consumer so that they don't get left holding the bag, but is also fair to the people investing capital in the state to insure that consumer. So thank you very much, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Jeffrey Carter, Florida Homeowners and Merlin Law Group. Okay, they are opposed to the bill. Christine Ashburn, Citizens Property Insurance Corporation. Wave in support. Stephen Kane, Florida Justice Association. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Stephen Kane on behalf of the Florida Justice Association and also a consumer of insurance in the state of Florida. We'd like to thank Representative Gregory for his efforts and his work with both sides of the aisle on this issue. Specifically, I'm going to reference back to Section 14, the ordinance and law coverage issue. That remains an issue for us. I think you heard Ms. Cassell explain from a consumer perspective what the issue is. Mr. Delegal just said something about contention being a good thing, and you want to keep that contention. So what I would ask you to do is, unfortunately, my hope is we'll be able to work this out before we get to the floors on both sides of the rotunda. But this ordinance and law issue is a big issue for consumers. If you have a fire today and the ordinance had changed, the building code had changed yesterday, State Farm would be forced to pay. We pay a premium for that ordinance and law coverage. If we have a fire today in our building and the building code changes 6 months later, whether they've given us our money, whether they've adjusted our claim or not, they're not required to pay for the increase, the increased cost that a building code change may require. And I think there's a path to work this out. I think Representative Gregory on his, I'm not sure I agreed with the first two, but certainly the third seemed like a viable possibility, where a homeowner could rely on what building code was in place. Of course, you know, there are policy issues that you'll need to weigh in with respect to. We change building codes for a reason, to make things safer, to make things better, and to make sure ultimately State Farm has more than $120 billion in their coffers, as Mr. Delegal said. Right now, we're gonna support moving forward. We do oppose the bill as it's written, but I think Representative Gregory's commitment and I believe Senator Perry's commitment on the other side of the rotunda to make this issue right for consumers and insurance companies. We thank you for your time, and we just ask you hold their feet to the fire and make them fix this issue. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you for your testimony, and I guess I probably should have asked one of the other speakers as well if anyone else wants to address this. I'll just ask you. You said they changed the building code for a reason. I understand that. Is a possible solution to this problem if you have a loss event that's requiring you to reconstruct some portion of your property that you just grandfather them at the building code, you just build it back to the code that it was at before, or is that going to be a... Is that not a solution? Maybe it's not because they update the code for a reason. That's why I'm asking you if you could speak to that.
Well, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly, Representative Gregory, in his third example, mentioned that as a possibility to grandfather in those claims. From my perspective as a consumer, it's certainly reasonable. It's better than the alternative, which is me reaching into my pocket and having to cover what I thought I bought coverage for. Because understand that we pay a premium for this ordinance and law coverage. Most mortgagors require you to have it. So we pay a premium for that. But if you don't have it, if you've paid your mortgage off, you're not required to buy it. You're not required to purchase replacement cost coverage. So that would be an option. One of the concerns, and I think the greater concern, we changed the building code to strengthen structures and hopefully prevent loss going forward in the future. So it's something you'll have to balance as a legislature, as the body, the policymaking body in the state. But, you know, what we don't want to have, OIR is making State Farm get this change. There's a reason OIR is doing it. And we would just ask before we do it, we find the solution. Because the homeowners, the consumers, are going to be the one left holding the bag if this change is implemented this year, going forward until it's fixed. And as Mr. Delegal said, when the contention's not there, because State Farm's going to be happy, we're not going to be talking about this. We're not going to have that issue, and it's going to be one-sided. So if we can't get it fixed this year, I would just ask it come out, and we have that contention that Mr. Delegal talked about kept in place so it can get fixed for the consumers of the state of Florida.
Representative Fabrizio, you are recognized for a question.
I'm good, he answered. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got Ashley Califay, Florida Surplus Lines Association, waiving support. That concludes public testimony. Members, we are in debate. Members, any debate? Representative Hardy, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that this is, by and large, a fine piece of legislation. I think it is a very good effort on the part of the sponsor and the folks who he has worked with to gather the consensus of lots of stakeholders and to put forward something that will relieve some of the upward pricing pressure that consumers are facing. And pricing is a function of what's in these policies, and that matters to consumers too. But this bit about the building codes changing between a loss event and a claim being paid, it concerns me. And Mr. Delegal, whose testimony I very much enjoyed, made some statements. You know, he said this is not a major issue. I would say that if it's not a major issue, why are we here? It's a major issue for somebody. There's a reason why it's being included in the bill. And the fact is, it's not a major issue for the insurer. It's probably a boon, but it is a major issue for the consumer. And Mr. Delegal also said that the insurance company has to know the bargain it's getting into when they make this agreement with the insurer. But in this case, the only way to grant certainty to the insurer is to take away the security and certainty that the consumer has. And so where interests diverge in this case, who do you choose? Who do you side with? Who deserves the benefit of the security and the certainty? Obviously, increased uncertainty is going to affect pricing. That's bad for consumers. But also, no one wants to pay for something that ultimately they can't use. And that's the problem that I'm having here. I think there's a broader issue, which is when you make insurers comply with some standards, obviously that's going to increase cost. But we want to make sure that insurance is insurance. I think insurance companies like to be in the insurance business on the revenue side, but there's also an expense side that you have to participate in. Otherwise, whatever you sold the consumer is worthless. Now, all that said, I won't be voting against this right now. I believe the representative when he says that he's interested in solutions to provide some security to all parties. One of the three things you mentioned is very interesting to me. I think that local governments very often overregulate, especially with respect to what people do with their properties. And I would be interested in something that would protect property owners from basically being stuck with the bill because of something their local government officials did. I have a problem with that. That said, and it was said by the gentleman from FJA, there's a reason why we update building codes. And I think we also need to think about that as well. So I don't know how we resolve this, but I remain hopeful that it can be resolved. And I believe that the folks who are involved in this process will work to make sure that the end result is something that's fair to folks on both sides of this. So I have some concerns, but I'll be voting for it today. Very much looking forward to working with you, Representative.
Any further debate? Members, any further debate? Ranking Member Wilhite, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your conversations, as you said, Representative, about this bill. I'm in the business of increased building standards and codes, not because I make money off of it, but it protects my life and the people that I work with. So increasing building codes and standards is the best thing we can do for all of Floridians, whether it's because of a storm or because of industry standards or because we find out there's new products that make things better, stronger, better, and safer for the people that live in the home or the people that have to respond to the homes if there's incidences or problems. So I don't believe that local governments are in the business of making money off of those permits, because that's about the only place they can make money off of increased building standards, in my opinion. So I think that's a good thing. The thing I'm concerned about is the comments that have been made today about protecting consumers if they get stuck in this time frame or things that happen. So surprisingly, probably to you, I'm going to support your bill today, because I get another bite at it at Commerce, and you've committed to us that you, and I take you for every aspect of your word and trust you, that you're willing to work on this and look at this these concerns that are brought forward, because I think we have two things to balance. One is the people providing the service, but we also have a huge obligation to the consumers that need relief and protections, and that's who I think we're really here to protect. And so I will be supporting you today. I know that you are an honorable man, and you committed to making these statements about working on things, and I know that you will. And so I want to see, as this moves forward, hopefully that we can make this even better, more consumer protection. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further debate, members? Any further debate? Seeing none, Representative Gregory, you are recognized to close on your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chairman. I appreciate it. Just briefly, I do want to address this point. I appreciate the comments and the questions and the debate. And I think that last bit of dialogue in the last 5 minutes there and the point raised by Representative Beltran and the speaker from FJA really hit it on the head. We could grandfather consumers. And maybe that's the appropriate thing to do. I mean, we grandfather them now. And you're right, Representative Wilhite. Building code changes and enhancements are good for Floridians. But it wouldn't be fair to either the consumer or the insurance company the way that it works now. So I think grandfathering may be the way to go, but I am committed to looking for a solution that is fair for Floridians and consumers. So we will work on that, and I'm glad that you're still supporting the bill. I do see this as an important area for us to address, but not an area that should derail the bill for now. So I appreciate your support.
Representative Gregory, having closed on the bill, Ms. Kimberly, will you please call the roll?
Chair DeSegley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Haig?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
C. Smith?
Yes.
D. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Zika?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, House Bill 815 will be reported favorably. Well done, Representative. Thank you. Okay, members, we will now take up House Bill 245, Massage Therapy, by Representative Cheney. Representative Cheney, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Chair Driscoll, Vice Chair Haig, Ranking Member Wilhite, for the opportunity to present HB 245 entitled Massage Therapy. The Practice Act of Massage defines the scope of practice for more than 38,000 licensed massage therapists practicing throughout the state of Florida. The Practice Act for Massage in Florida is out of date and does not accurately reflect the scope of care provided by licensed massage therapists. The general statute has not been significantly updated in decades, yet the field of massage therapy has continued to progress. The intention of this bill expands the scope of practice to better define current massage therapy practices as follows. It updates the terminology to refer to the practice as massage therapy, specifies that massage therapy is a healthcare practice in order to provide better clarification that massage therapy does not fall into the same classification as personal services such as hair or nail salons. This expansion of law is not, this is not an expansion of law as massage therapy is already included within the definition of healthcare practitioner, statute 456.001. This bill specifies that massage therapists may assess patients for the appropriate application of massage treatment and defines the word assessment. In order to prevent harm to a patient, massage therapists should assess for best outcomes. Regarding the addition of knee, the purpose of the addition of the word knee is intended to be inclusive regarding particular massage modalities such as ashiatsu, shiatsu, Thai massage, certain stretching techniques, and many others. The knee can also be used for the purposes of positioning the patient within orthopedic massage, sports massage, and neuromuscular massage. Utilizing the knee in positioning the patient gives the therapist better access to certain muscle groups, as well as providing a function of stability for both the LMT and the patient. This bill updates the Practice Act for Massage in Florida to better reflect the current practice, and that is the bill.
Okay, Representative, okay, so members, we are there any questions of Representative Cheney on the bill? Any questions on the bill? Any public testimony? Anita Berry, Florida State Massage Therapy Association. She waves in support. Thank you. Okay, members, any debate? Any debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, Representative Cheney, you are recognized to close on the bill.
Wave closed, Chair.
Okay, having waved closed, Ms. Kimberly, will you please call the roll?
Chair DeSigley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Haig?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Brown? Driscoll? Fabricio?
Yes.
Betterhoff?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
C. Smith?
Yes.
D. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Zika?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Members, by your vote, House Bill 245 will be reported favorably. Thank you, Representative Cheney. Okay, members, we will now take up PCS for House Bill 6077, Assets of an Estate in Administration, by Representative Robinson. Representative Robinson, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. PCS for House Bill 6077 is a repealer bill. I probably shouldn't mention this. This is my first repealer bill in the Florida legislature. But the Federal Savings and Loan Insurance Corporation was created in 1934. In order to insure deposits of savings and loans associations. However, this entity was abolished in 1989 on the heels of the savings and loan crisis of the 1980s. Savings and loan associations are now insured by the FDIC, as are commercial banks. This bill removes statutory reference to the FSLIC along with other obsolete language. And that's the bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Members, any questions on the bill? Any questions? Seeing none, public testimony, no public testimony. Members, we are in debate on the bill. Seeing no debate, Representative Robinson, you are recognized to close on your bill.
I'll waive close, Mr. Chair.
Representative Robinson, having closed on the bill, Ms. Kimberly, will you please call the roll?
Chair DeSegli?
Yes.
Vice Chair Haig?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Brown? Driscoll? Fabricio?
Yes.
Betterhoff?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
C. Smith?
Yes.
D. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Zika?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, PCS for House Bill 6077 will be reported favorably. Okay, members, if there is no further business, that concludes our agenda for today's meeting. Representative Costa will rise. And without objection, this meeting is adjourned.